The Bush administration is moving to speed up the transfer of political sovereignty to an interim Iraqi government, which it hopes to have in place next July. Some observers worry that continued U.S. casualties and election year politics might drive the U.S. to pull out of Iraq sooner than necessary. But President Bush insists America won't leave Iraq until the country is secure and political power has been turned over to an elected government.
By far the vast majority of people understand that if America were to leave and the terrorists were to prevail in their desire to drive us out, the country would fall into chaos, and no one wants that.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has said that America's only exit strategy in Iraq is success. Still, some diplomats, politicians, and others are considering a range of options for a speedier U.S. withdrawal. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
Earlier this month, President Bush laid out a broad vision for U.S. policy in the Middle East that placed a democratic Iraq at the epicenter of regional transformation.
Iraqi democracy will succeed, and that success will send forth the news from Damascus to Tehran that freedom can be the future of every nation. The establishment of a free Iraq at the heart of the Middle East will be a watershed event in the global democratic revolution.
Failure to establish democracy in Iraq, the president implied, would be disastrous for the region as well as for Iraqi and American security. Democracy building would clearly take a generational commitment, as Mr. Bush acknowledged, not merely a few years. But some analysts believe there's a sharp split within the Bush administration between those in the White House who genuinely believe it's vital that Iraq become a beacon of liberty and others there who think that's merely a nice idea.
It is very, very clear that what many other people in this administration want is to minimize our involvement, maximize the Iraqi involvement, and try to get out as soon as possible.
Ivo Dalder, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, notes that the president has made a practice of telling the public, "Judge my deeds, not my words." Dalder wonders whether pragmatism and political concerns will prompt an accelerated drawdown of U.S. troops and stall the president's larger stated goal of democratizing Iraq and U.S. allies throughout the Middle East.
Is he going to use the $2 billion annual aid that we give to Egypt as a form of leverage to push Mubarak to hold real elections? Is he going to push the Saudis to have the Saudi monopoly of power, which now continues to reside with the royal family, be broken up? Is he going to start talking about Pakistan to push it in a more democratic way? And so far, including in places like Iraq, I'm afraid that the rhetoric is outpacing the deeds.
White House officials are keenly aware that any departure from success is our exit strategy risks becoming a political liability and code for cut and run. That's just what critics say the U.S. did in Beirut in 1983. The Reagan White House talked tough about standing up to terrorists after a suspected Hezbollah truck bomber killed 241 Marines at the barracks near the Beirut airport. But a few months later, the Reagan administration pulled the Marines out of Lebanon.
This has unfortunately haunted our policymakers ever since.
Richard Murphy had just started his job as Assistant Secretary of State for the Middle East when the Lebanon withdrawal decision was made. Murphy recalls that the specter of Vietnam, a fear that the public wouldn't tolerate more casualties, dominated talks about bringing the Marines home. Murphy says that decision and a similar hurried U.S. exit from Somalia 10 years later may have emboldened terrorists and even the current Iraqi insurgents battling the U.S. occupation.
The way it was done, it looked like we were on the run and terrorism had succeeded in doing exactly what it wanted because it sent a message of a lack of staying power on the part of the Americans.
The Defense Department's current rotation plan aims to reduce American troop numbers in Iraq by about 25,000 by late next spring. That would still leave about 100,000 U.S. forces on the ground. Defense leaders continue to say that commanders are not asking for any additional American forces. But others in Congress and academia are looking at a range of possibilities for a speedier drawdown and exit. University of Maryland professor William Galston says while it is unreasonable to set an artificial hard timetable for a U.S. exit, the administration needs to try once again to bring the world community into the occupation.
We ought to have internationalized the occupation immediately after the end of the war. I think we blew our chance to do it then, but I don't think that chance is gone forever. I think we ought to go back to the international community and negotiate more seriously.
The Bush administration is considering yet another return to the United Nations for a resolution on Iraq that would support its revised plan for an accelerated transfer of sovereignty. The administration reportedly wants UN help for what's expected to be a difficult power transition from the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority to an interim Iraqi body next summer. Meantime, most of President Bush's potential Democratic opponents oppose the $87 billion aid package for Iraq, Afghanistan, and U.S. troops there. And a few in Congress, including one Democratic presidential hopeful, are calling for an immediate U.S. withdrawal.
We are looking at an intensification of this conflict in Iraq. That's why I'm insisting that we take a new course, end the occupation.
Ohio Congressman and White House hopeful Dennis Kucinich thinks the U.S. should pay for rebuilding damaged Iraqi infrastructure. But Kucinich wants the U.S. to quickly renounce all other economic and political interests there. He believes that would convince a reluctant U.N. to take on more political transition and security duties in Iraq. Kucinich rejects critics who call his plan totally unrealistic.
What could be more unrealistic than the United States attacking a nation which did not attack us, which had nothing to do with 9/11, thinking that somehow this country has the right to carve up Iraq in a privatization scheme, which is clearly in violation of the UN Charter. American troops are continuing to die. The security situation is getting progressively worse. That's why we need to get the UN in and the U.S. out of Iraq.
Others are openly advocating a more isolationist stand. Many thinkers at the libertarian Cato Institute, including Ted Galen Carpenter, say as much as the U.S. would like to leave Iraq stable and democratic, that goal is untenable.
The primary objective should be to cut America's losses, not transform Iraq into Iowa, which seems to be the objective of some of the more ambitious nation builders.
Iraq has no democratic roots. It's been ruled by strongmen since its creation by the British after the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire. So Galen Carpenter believes one viable exit strategy is for the U.S. to hand Iraq back to a gentler version of its last dictator.
A housebroken version of Saddam Hussein, someone who would rule with a very strong hand, but without Saddam's maniacal brutality. We can live with a number of different outcomes in Iraq. We don't have to be happy about it, but there are a lot of regimes in the world that we don't particularly like, and yet we're able to live with them.
But many in the White House see that idea, or any other deviation from their stated goal of a safe, free Iraq, as not only foolish, but counterproductive to long-term U.S. interests in the region. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Washington.